Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Have you ever found yourself in a sticky spot where you end up muttering something like, why can't this just be simple? Why can't there be just a right and a wrong? And we'll leave it at that. Today we're kicking off an open house mini-series on ethics, that part of life that informs our decisions, or perhaps even makes them more difficult to make. Andrew Cameron is a lecturer in ethics at Moore College and is director of the college's Centre for Christian Living, as well as the author of A Joined Up Life, a Christian account of how ethics works. Andrew, welcome to Open House. You're an ethics guy. What are ethics?
Excellent. Well, thanks for having me, Duane. It's a great question to begin with. I'm not a fan of the word ethics in a way, because I think it's one of these words that just frightens people. It's a word that is associated with these discussions that people have about things that people find really scary.
Yeah.
But actually, we're doing it every day. Every time you don't go into the disabled car park, or every time you try and work out what's best for your child's lunch, or every time you're trying to work out what's the honest thing to do at work when you've got to be a little bit secretive or something. You know, these are really hard things that we live through every moment of our lives, you know. And, there are some thinkers who think we are born with this capacity. It's hard to prove, but it's certainly the case that it's the stuff that makes our relationships possible, and the way we conduct ourselves in all of those little daily moments is kind of what binds us together as a community. So where did it come from? Well, it's been with us for a very long time. You have all sorts of different people thinking about it. And as a Christian, I'm just deeply fascinated with how the Bible sort of helps us through a lot of this.
Is there a right and wrong with ethics?
I guess, in a sense, I have to say, yes, because almost by definition, trying to work out what's ethical is working out, you know, the right thing to do in a certain situation. But I've got to dive a little deeper than that and observe that, you know, often we're in situations where you're trying to defend two or three or four good things, you know, and that's what's hard about it. You know, your dilemmas are often when you've got a good thing over here and a good thing over there, and you're trying and they're crashing together and you can't work out what to do, you know, because you don't know which one to uphold and which one that you've got to let go. And that's so that's why people sometimes think that there isn't any single answer to some moral questions.
In a world that's so potently anti-Christian at times, what is the role of Christianity in ethics in Australia?
Yeah, that's a really good question too, and I've been thinking about this a lot. I mean, the first thing to observe, I think, is it's easy to get a bit of amnesia about how much Christian thought has really shaped our culture. I think of someone like Governor Phillip. I don't exactly know his spirituality, but back on pretty much the first day they set foot on the shores of Australia, he made it clear we weren't going to enslave Indigenous people, which was a big deal in the day. That was a hard thing to determine. And I think the case can be made that he got that because there was a big discussion going on, or starting to go on, in Britain at the time that started in Christian thought, that everyone's in the image of God and you can't enslave each other. You know, so there's little moments like this all throughout our culture where Christian thought has had an impact on what we do. It's become very hard nowadays, of course, hasn't it? Because people imagine that being a Christian is just a private thing, that it shouldn't be brought into public space at all. But Christians can't do that. They just can't live like that. To be a person whose identity is somehow grounded in Jesus Christ, we're going to be carrying that into the community in all sorts of ways. So at very least, we need to be respected as people who have a view and are going to live it. And sometimes it follows that we're going to be able to point to things that others are missing that we know because we've learned it as Christians. It doesn't follow that you're imposing your values on someone at that point. You might actually be alerting them to something really valuable that's gone AWOL in the discussion. So I'm quite optimistic about the capacity for Christians to go out into public space and just say things and have arguments that stand or fall on their merits, and we shouldn't be, you know, censored for doing that.
Andrew, we live in a multicultural Australia where if ethics are born out of our backgrounds, there are so many different perspectives on what is right and wrong all around us. How can we come together as a community and agree on what's right and wrong given so many different perspectives?
That's certainly the case. For philosophical thinkers about ethics, they worry about this all the time, really, because it kind of ends up looking like there's no objective moral reality that you can appeal to. Really, all that we can do is keep comparing and contrasting our various views of things. Now, what do I do with that? Well, I think there is an objective moral reality. However, I simply have to accept that I'm sharing this, this nation and this planet with people who see things very differently. And all we can do is keep listening to what matters most to each other. And we often just write up codes of rules that we have to follow
arbitrarily.
And, arbitrarily. That's right. Just to make life a little bit simpler. Like
this road is 50 k's an hour.
Exactly. That's right. Sometimes the rules go a little, deeper than that. I was looking at a document that I have to adhere to in my role as a pastor called Faithfulness in Service. It's got several rules about what it is to treat people properly and not to hurt them. And in a way, I should know this from other sources, but sometimes I just need these rules to remind me.
Okay.
And a lot of people have professional codes like that that they have to follow. But that's not all there is there? People want to dig deeper than rules, and they'll often talk in terms of, say, human rights. So I didn't use that term when we're talking about refugees, but that'll be the sort of bedrock for some people when they're trying to talk about others that are different from us. Well, we all have basic human rights. That's a kind of a platform that they begin from, is something that they reckon is just built into the way things are, that can't be altered.
The sacredness of human life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we've all got conceptions of that. We've all got something that drives us where we think that the basic reality is built in a certain way that should never be messed with, and sometimes that takes the language of human rights. A lot of people in Australia are just very driven by goals, which is the results part of the book. We're a nation of what they call utilitarians. We're pretty big on just getting a result that's going to make most people happy.
Yeah.
And you can see that in workplaces. We're pretty big on just getting a result that'll make fix the bottom line and keep everyone employed, and so we can get very results fixated, as if the only way of measuring what's good is the good result. And it's worse, that becomes the ends justifies the means. You'll do anything you can to get the result.
Not dissimilar to, in a sporting analogy, the Australian cricket team's success.
Right.
They have a win.
Yep.
Some of the behaviours around that winning, one would question. Is that ethically, is that an appropriate reaction? And yet, they won.
I know. And you can find a real live debate in Australia about that. Some people will say, well, no, it's exactly right that they have to pull whatever levers they've got to get that win. Others say, no, if you can break things along the way if you do that. You can corrode yourself as a person. You can actually, the cost is too high, and that's something really interesting going on in that discussion. The other, which kind of leads to the fourth thing I talk about. A lot of people like to talk about values, which is not my favourite word. I find it a bit of a lame word, but what they're trying to drive at is that we do have these ways of habitually living that kind of matter to us, and that we'll say are something that we want to continue to be. I'm going to be an honest person. I'm not going to get that extra contract if it means I have to sort of break my integrity. So it seems to me that most Australians have got this kind of cluster of rules, rights, values, results that they use to try and muddle through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not always sure it makes a lot of sense to them how all this stuff joins up. and that's why I call the book Joined Up Life, right?
Because
I just really feel for people, because a lot of people are really struggling with trying to, work out how to be and what to do and who to care for. But it's still very confusing, you can get into all sorts of fights when a so-called right interferes with a good result, and when someone's values interferes with a rule that they're supposed to obey. And that stuff is really hard for people, Where I take it in the book, which I hope is interesting to people, it seems to me that one of the great things about Jesus was that he was someone who was able to knit all of these kind of angles together in his own life in a really beautiful, coherent way. And that's why Christians follow him, not because we think we're better than everyone else. We kind of know we're not. We're trying to actually learn what it is to be someone like him who gets it. And that's sort of what the book tries to unpack.
Was Jesus, looking at some of what seemed to be really radical decisions and statements on his part in real time, depending on who you were hearing the conversation, relative to being a Pharisee or somebody from the Sanhedrin or the woman at the well, for instance, was Jesus the purest, most ethical being ever, or was he an ethical revolutionary?
That's a great question. Can I have both? I'd like to say both. I think he was definitely revolutionary. And part of his genius was kind of seeing into the cracks. He just kept seeing what everyone else kept missing. They were in a very highly rule-bound culture, you know, where following the Old Testament laws were crucial to them. You know, you could just see the ways in which even that good thing, these Old Testament laws, had become kind of twisted out of all proportion, you know, and lost their real purpose in people's lives. And he keep diving under these ways that people lived the law and point to the relationships that were getting broken by doing it badly. Or he'd do things like the woman at the well is a classic example. Here he is going out to meet this woman in a way that nobody else had any time for, any interest in, and indeed that you would have been kind of considered suspect.
Scandalized
exactly,
by.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. So what I love about this is he's not dominated by tribal loyalty. This is one of the other things that really dogs us as humans, and you can see it everywhere in Australian life. We often actually what decides us on what to do is what our mates are going to think, yeah. Right? And that'll just constrain us, and we become less than we should be, but we just don't want to lose our little tribe, you know? And Jesus just knew how to keep stepping out of these tribal loyalties and to do what's right, and in a way that just had incredible courage to it, you know?
And in a very real way, it's never more tribal than in a Christian faith under a denomination,
exactly,
if you will.
Yeah.
Or I am a Christian, therefore I represent this moral code, which inevitably brings a friction between where I stand with my team and you and the secular world stand with your team.
Yep.
What's the lesson for us in meeting in the middle ethically?
Yep. This is, I really think about this a lot, Duane. I find it, in a way, quite technical, because we can't stop being social beings. There are those we always have to be alongside and with and working with others, you know, and so I'm not pretending that somehow Christianity means that you stop being deeply social, you know. We have these relationships, we gather around common tasks, we kind of band together with people of like mind. So there's nothing, in a sense, wrong with that. We've got to kind of, we do have to have folks that we're, you know, with and cooperating with. At the same time, though, I think there's this skill that we can learn about. I heard this great phrase, you know, sort of word that somebody make up. And xenophobia is when you can't handle somebody in the tribe that's not yours. Well, Christians are kind of learning xenophilia. We're learning what it is to love the other, even who's really different. Which is kind of what the Jesus, in a sense, is driving at with that famous Good Samaritan story, because here's a guy that's able to just cross that phobia boundary and still love this other person. Doesn't mean we have to agree with the other. That's the other thing. That's a mistake people make, that I can only accept you if I agree with you. I don't think that's true. Some of the best relationships are where you're in conflict, you discover what matters to the other, you can't agree, but you're still going to accept each other and treat each other with as precious and with respect. And that's, I think, what, in a way... And that really informs some of that discussion of the Christian tribes, because you're absolutely right. Some of the most egregious and terrible kinds of dislike occur across those little denominational groupings. You've got to have denominations. They're ways of trying to group together around what matters to you, but you've still got to keep learning what it is to treat the other as precious, you know, and that's quite hard.
As a focus in life, living an ethical life is something we all want to do, I think, when we understand what ethics are. What advice do you have for people who are unsure about what that looks like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the things that I say pretty much off the bat in my book is don't make that mistake of only thinking about it when you've got a decision to make, okay? Because that's a really bad place to be in. If you kind of keep putting off your thoughts about right and wrong and just until the moment when you're trying to decide whether to divorce or whether to buy a house on the beach or, you know, change jobs. I mean, if people are playing catch-up in these moments and they're trying to decide about the thing, but they haven't got a clue sort of the basis of the decision. So they're doing all this extra mental processing trying to make the decision. So ethics shouldn't just be what gets called decisionism. It's really helpful to just take the time out to, like a lot of things in life, just sort of learn your way into it when the stakes aren't as high, you know?
They're big pictures that you carry in the book. Can we put further conversations in abeyance? Recommend people grab a hold of the book. It's A Joined Up Life, A Christian Account of How Ethics Work.
That'd be great. I'll just add, you can get the ebook, and you get it through the publisher's site, thinkivp.com. That's all one word, thinkivp.com, and that's how you load it up using the means that they describe.
Andrew Cameron, it's the beginning of a much bigger conversation. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Brian.